Good afternoon. Eunice and Thomas Pinginata here in an attempt to convey what little there is to read in local things in the Courier for Waterloo and Cedar Falls for Sunday, September 5th. Today's weather, high in the low 80s and tonight's low in the lower 50s. Courier has changed formats and probably in about everything is in one section now instead of several sections. So we will see what we can do today.
The Jewels of St. Mary's. Museums will house artifacts from Church of Sullivan Brothers. Several individuals have come together to make sure the childhood church and school of Waterloo's five Sullivan Brothers lives on in military museums across the country. Items from vacant, soon-to-be-demolished St. Mary's Catholic Church and School, home parish and grade school of the Sullivans, are being preserved by volunteers. Those helping include Kelly Sullivan, granddaughter and grandniece of the five brothers who died together during World War II, 79 years ago, in November. Portions of the church pews, painted glass windows, and even the school's recess bell are being preserved for donation to several museums, including the Five Sullivan Brothers Iowa Veterans Museum, part of the Grout Museum District in Waterloo, Buffalo and Erie County Naval and Military Park in Buffalo, New York, where the first of two Navy destroyers named for the brothers is located, the decommissioned USS The Sullivans, DD 537, served during World War II and the Korean War, National Museum of the Pacific War in Fredericksburg, Texas, the birthplace of U.S. Navy Fleet Admiral Chester W. Nimitz, Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Pacific Fleet during World War II. Previously for that museum, Kelly Sullivan did a recording reading of her great-grandmother, Alida's January 1943 letter to the Navy inquiring about her son's fates. Preserving the St. Mary's legacy is an endeavor that has spanned several months, said Kelly Sullivan, a Cedar Falls third grade teacher and the granddaughter of Albert Sullivan. He was the youngest of the brothers and the only one who married. She is also the official Navy sponsor of the current USS The Sullivans, DDG-68, a guided missile destroyer now on deployment in a worldwide joint exercise with the British Royal Navy. Through her network of contacts in her role as sponsor, Sullivan is reaching out to find homes for the artifacts from St. Mary's. This can be a way we can bring all the museums together, she said. We're blessed that so many people, not just throughout the United States, but throughout the world, are interested in the story of this ultimate sacrifice. The Sullivans represent so many who sacrificed. There's so many different, incredible museums who talk about that. Now it's going to be awesome. How wonderful to have St. Mary's, this beautiful church that the Sullivan boys and their parents attended and were very connected to in three states. I think the most enjoyable part of this project has been seeing how thrilled the St. Mary's people are, she added. They are excited to have this piece of their history and their faith journey in a permanent location, in a permanent exhibit that will always be there for people to see, so that people know what St. Mary's Church was. I was very happy and thankful that St. Mary's people reached out to me. St. Mary closed in the early 2000s in a consolidation of Catholic parishes in East Waterloo and Evansdale. The city took title to the property 2 or 3 years ago through court action after it became tax delinquent and fell into disrepair during a period of private ownership. The building and adjacent former covet are now empty, overgrown with vegetation, with broken windows. The separate parish rectory building has already been demolished as part of flood control improvements along adjacent Verdon Creek. In December, the city granted access through a local contractor, allowing people connected to the church to save as many items from the church and school as possible. The city has started the process for asbestos testing and abatement and will be moving to demolition, hopefully this winter or spring. Waterloo Community Planning and Development Director Noel Anderson said. He said volunteers have completed acquisition of historic items. So things are happening, just going through proper process, Anderson said. We have had interest in redeveloping of the site, so hopefully we'll also see some construction on the site in the near future. Longtime former St. Mary parishioners Mary Ann Nolan and John Hayes have saved historic items from the church school building, even holding a pew day in December. Excuse me. Former parishers lined up in vehicles to pick up pews from the church for keepsakes. For John and I, the building carries a huge emotional connection, Nolan said. There's a passion about that building and its history. We could not be more thrilled that St. Mary's and the Sullivan Brothers' legacy will live on through these artifacts. We probably each had more than 100 hours in there in that freezing cold weather, and it was miserable and awful, Hayes said. Some days I was wondering, what are we doing here? But the fact is that not all going to get hit by a wrecking ball is worth every amount of time spent in there. I just didn't know it would go this far. With Kelly, that's pretty cool. Some of those artifacts are already on their way to their new home, thanks to the family of a decorated Afghanistan war veteran who once was a student of Kelly Sullivan's, Taylor Morris of Cedar Falls. The Navy Explosive Ordnance Disposal Expert lost portions of all four limbs in a May 2012 bomb blast in Afghanistan, and his recovery received national attention. Morris's family was headed to the Buffalo area for a Labor Day weekend family wedding and loaded up their SUV with some of hard-to-ship items the Buffalo Military Park wanted. Julie Morris, Taylor's mother, said she bumped into Kelly at an outdoor concert in Cedar Falls. Julie said when she told Kelly of their plans, Kelly said, "I've got stuff for you." Julie called it serendipity. Kelly attributed it to the luck of the Irish, her grandfather and great uncles watching over her. "I'm super excited with Taylor being my student. I've had a connection with that family for so long," Kelly said. "Now he's going to visit the ship my great-grandma Alida Sullivan christened during World War II. In Waterloo, a pair of the church's large painted glass windows will be incorporated into the Veterans Memorial area of the Sullivan Brothers Iowa Veterans Museum, which also acquired a couple of church pews. The windows will be illuminated and placed on either side of a lighted scroll of names of Iowans who died in military service, according to museum staff. The Veterans Memorial area is a chapel-type corner of the museum, featuring the flags of various U.S. service branches, where visitors may pause for reflection. The Sullivan Museum also is receiving plaster cornices, rosettes, two wooden shields from the choir loft, and the school recess bell. George, Francis, Joseph, Madison, and Albert Sullivan, the sons of Thomas and Alida Sullivan of Waterloo, died after their ship, the Navy cruiser USS Juno, was torpedoed and sunk by a Japanese submarine November 13, 1942, following the naval battle of Guadalcanal. All but 14 of the Juno's crew of nearly 700 perished in the sinking at sea, including all five Sullivans. It was the greatest combat-related loss of life by one family at one time in U.S. military history. While St. Mary's School was a grade school for much of its later history, it also was one of three Catholic high schools in Waterloo which combined to form Columbus High School in 1959.
Teen arrested in June shooting in Waterloo. A Cedar Falls teen has been arrested in a June shooting in Waterloo that sent a woman to the hospital. J. Marion James Boyd, 16, was arrested Wednesday for willful injury causing bodily injury, going armed, and intimidation. With the weapon, he was charged as an adult, and bond was set at $50,000. Police alleged the shooting occurred in an attempted home invasion at 611 Johnson Street around 9:30 p.m. June 12th. Witnesses reported seeing Boyd and others knocking at the door to the home and then going to a parking lot. Michaela Ryan was driving by the address when someone opened fire and she realized she had a grazing bullet wound to the lower back, according to court records. She drove to a nearby hospital for treatment. Officers found spent shell casings at the scene and searched a Randall Street home in Waterloo where Boyd was living at the time. Inside, they found a Jennings 9mm pistol and two other firearms. Ballistic tests later showed the Jennings handgun matched casings found at the shooting scene, according to court records. Next item, Griffin patch on Waterloo agenda. The city council will consider removing the patch from uniforms by September 30th. The council members promised resolution placing a deadline on removing the retired Griffin patch from police clothing is on Tuesday night's council agenda. Councilor Pat Morrissey, along with councilors Sharon Juan and Jerome Amos, submitted two resolutions relating to the patch for Wednesday's meeting. Moving from Monday due to the Labor Day holiday. The first orders the old Griffin design to be completely removed from any and all Waterloo Police Department properties by September 30th, 2021, with the exception of weapons revolvers, which will be phased out over a longer period of time, according to the resolution. The other resolution orders that the same three council members will personally drive the new police department patches from contractor Hallmark Emblems to Carpenter's Uniforms, which is scheduled to do the replacement work. However many trips it may take at no cost to the city of Waterloo. Morrissey gave warning at the last council meeting in mid-August that he would bring both resolutions accusing persons inside the police department of dragging this out and stonewalling when it came to removing the old logo from the uniforms, polo shirts, vehicles, and other items. The logo, a red griffin, adopted in the 1960s, was officially retired by the city council more than a year ago at the request of several citizens who claimed it resembles a red KKK dragon. The Waterloo Police Protective Association suggested the new logo simply the name of the department in red on a yellow background in April. The council will also consider approving Cardinal Construction's request to move the final completion date of the convention center renovation from October 29th to January 7th due to long lead times of materials, according to Noel Anderson, Community Planning and Development Director. The construction company also was requesting to move the center's substantial completion dates from October 15th to December 23rd.
Art-a-Palooza returns to Cedar Falls. Main Street Festival adds entertainment, plenty of new artists. Cedar Falls. There will be an additional block to shop at Saturday's Art-a-Palooza. Nearly 500 regional artists will showcase and sell their artwork down the center of Main Street from the 100 to 400 blocks along the parkade. Entertainment will take place at River Place Plaza. The juried show is from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. At 9:46 a.m., the junior ROTC will present colors and play taps to pay tribute to victims and survivors of the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. Exchange Club members will be handing out small American flags to children. The ceremony will take place at River Place Plaza at 100 East 2nd Street. Traditionally, Art-a-Palooza kicks off the fall session of activities on the Saturday after Labor Day. The family-friendly outdoor festival is hosted by Community Main Street. Its mission is to focus on the arts as a whole, including different artistic mediums, entertainment, and participation in the arts. It is our 15th anniversary, said Kim Baer, Community Main Street Executive Director. When we began thinking about our 15th coming up, we wanted to do something big and cool. Now we're just happy to be having a show and doing it safely. One of Cedar Falls' signature outdoor events, Artapalooza, is returning after last year's gathering was canceled because of the coronavirus pandemic. The new block was added this year to allow for more social distancing with about 11 artists per block. We had lots of artists ask for larger booths because they made so many new pieces during the COVID shutdown and their inventory is up, said Baer. Artists who were juried into the Artapalooza 2020 also were invited to participate this year. It plays well for us because the artists will keep refreshing their inventory throughout the day, so people will have plenty of reasons to visit all the booths, explained Nina Hammer, Artapalooza committee chairperson. This is by far my favorite day because I get to see the work of some of my favorite artists who are coming back, meet new artists, and be part of the community. I love seeing people in downtown Cedar Falls on the street, shopping and having a good time, Hammer said. Artist in the 100 block will be Bill Hayward, Wood, David Leeper, Sculpture, Ellen Shorbut, Fiber, Alyssa Engelhart, Smith, Ceramics, Carolyn Francis, Jewelry, Mickey and Dan Johnson, Mixed Media, Bruce Litter, Drawing, Joe Bohr, Wood, Michelle Roseberg, Jewelry, Joan Gasper Hart, Ceramics, and Jennifer Schelling, Painting. In the 200 block, Darrell Elwickson, Jewelry, Lisa and Rich Robertson, Ceramics, Will Beard, Drawing, Rebecca Dodson, Painting, Brian Hayes, Sculpture, Robert Hertigs, Ceramics, Connie Rogers, Jewelry, Lisa Nelson, Fiber, Gary Ingersoll, Photography, Erica Gooding, Jewelry, and James Kearns, Ceramics. Booths in the 300 block.
Ceramics?
Yes, ceramics.
All right.
Booths in the 300 block will be Laura Ross, Jewelry, Will Overstreet, Painting, Jana Voss, Ceramics, Etha Edvidson, Drawing, Mallory Gardner, Fiber, Mia Corrick, Sculpture, Anna Olson and Janet Drake, Painting, Pat Peterson, Jewelry, Amy Muggenberg, Glass, Jim Kronk, Ceramics, and Alyssa Walton, Mixed Media and Painting. Setting up in the added 400 block, Ebony King, Jewelry, Nicole Sands, Drawing, Janelle Gemlon, Drawing, Dave Johnson, Wood, Beth Kivett, Glass, Susan Kennicott, Mixed Media, Olivia Garner, Jewelry, Nicole O'Brien, Painting, Chris Kuntz, and Chantel Downing, Fiber, Annie Alvaro, Printmaking, Jewelry Spragat, Sculpture, and Eric Marwood. There will be fewer hands-on activities for children this year because of the sanitary concerns, Baer said, but the Hearst Center for the Arts in Hatchlings and Hens will have projects. Visitors can stroll, shop, and dine at restaurants and spend the day in the downtown district. Stores will be open for customers. Entertainment begins at 9 a.m. at River Plaza with Phil and Travis, followed by the University of Northern Iowa's Schools. Carter Cruz, Dylan and Brent Greer, UNI Jazz Group, and Bad News, Brian Sink, Cedar Falls High School Band, and Music Hill Studios.
More on this Griffin police patch thing. This is a guest column here written by Belinda Creighton Smith. She is a pastor of Faith Temple Baptist Church in Waterloo and adjunct instructor in the social work department at the University of Northern Iowa. She writes, I grew up in Waterloo during the 1960s. I will never forget the acts of resistance and riots sparked by Jim Crowism and the policies and practices of the Waterloo Police Department at that time. The worst disregarded the worst disregard and degradation of Waterloo's historical marginalized people was the placement of the dragon, aka Griffin, on police cars. It was inexplicable. Public servants entrusted with the safety of our community were now flaunting a symbol of hate that was aligned with the most deplorable faction in our country, the KKK. Time has passed, and some are not aware of the history and long-lasting effects that this image has on police community relations in the city of Waterloo. If you are supporting this symbol, please ask someone who has lived through the horrors of this unpleasant past and about the daily reminders of it with every encounter with a Waterloo police officer or every time one sees a Waterloo police car pass by. If you supported this symbol before, you knew the full story. Now that you know, rescind your support. For those who do not know and will not accept the lived experience of Black people in Waterloo, research the archives of the Courier. Google unrest in Waterloo, Iowa during the 1960s, and you will find the information you must have in order to make a truly informed decision. We are moving beyond this, right? Better together and forward together. Let's eliminate the hurtful attitudes, images, and rhetoric that has served to refresh the trauma experienced by your neighbors of color who are trying to thrive in our community. To support this symbol is akin to suggesting that the swastika is a Hindu symbol that represents prosperity and good luck, so it's okay to use it with the presence of our neighbors. Think about it. Then two letters to the editor along the same line. Insult to police, and this is written by Dennis Harbaugh of Waterloo. The recent guest opinion on August 29th from three previous Waterloo police chiefs is an insult to all current Waterloo police officers. The main point in the chief's article is that the police department morale has tanked because the city officials changed the patch design on individual uniforms. They claim that this change in a small piece of cloth has caused the morale of the entire department to sink to the lowest point in decades. Seriously? After all the advanced and continued training officers have received, after all the taxpayer dollars which have been spent providing them with the latest and modern equipment, after decades of experience on the streets, after all that, the chiefs expect us to believe the Waterloo police officers are not mentally tough and can be completely thrown off their game because of a small change in their uniform? If true, these three previous police chiefs failed miserably in their job. Waterloo's police officers are not emotionally fragile teenagers and are capable of doing their job no matter what the patch on their arm looks like. These three former chiefs owe every police officer and the citizen of Waterloo an apology. And one more letter to the editor written by Judy Myers of Cedar Falls. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce this, Corson disappoints. I was saddened to read a former Waterloo Police Chief Bernie Cornson weigh in on the removal of the 1960s Griffin logo and cause the low morale, and that the removal was made due to a small group who were offended. There was a time Cornson did listen to a small group, and he did change policing cultures in 1990 when even fewer citizens advocated to train his staff on mental health crisis. CIT officers learned how to avoid suicide by cop and improve safety issues for officers responding to crisis. Some of the officers told me they were proud to use their new training. Cornson talked with pride about his new CIT officers. Now is the time for another culture change.
Playing with passion. Youth Orchestra back at UNI after COVID hiatus last season, Cedar Falls. Elliot Perdum was looking forward to an audition last year for the first time for the Northern Iowa Youth Orchestra, or NIYO, before the COVID-19 pandemic canceled the season. To prepare for this year's season after the hiatus, the sophomore at Cedar Falls High School and several other high school students who play string instruments, he plays the cello, were happy to play in a sort of preseason orchestra the Summer Institute held for the first time in August. "We really haven't been playing in orchestras for a year and a half," he said. As the group finished its final practice before a concert wrapping up their two-week camp, it didn't sound like a group of 20 teenagers that forgotten how to make music together during COVID at all, surprising even their conductor, John Childs. "I was originally going to treat this orchestra a little kinder than his usual tough love self that comes out during the NIYO season, but he didn't, and they rose up to the occasion," he said, "which means I'm going to have a really good NYO year this year, I can tell." NIYO was resurrected by Childs several years ago. A University of Northern Iowa Suzuki student affiliated audition-only orchestra for students older than 14. It has a fall and spring season, holds a side-by-side concert with symphony, and tours Iowa. But Childs doesn't want orchestra teachers from around the Cedar Valley to think of this as elite. He just wants students who have a passion for it, regardless of how long they've been playing. He didn't start playing the violin until his seventh grade and is now a professional musician. "I will create the elite. I don't need them to come in at that level," he said. "I just need them to have lessons, which we have scholarships for lessons, and I need them to work." Philip Boyson, a junior at Waterloo West, started playing the violin in sixth grade, a bit late compared with some of the other students at the Summer Institute. Some began playing instruments in pre-K. "Childs and Boyson has blossomed right alongside those peers," said Boyson, and Childs was a big part of that. "It's a learning experience. You get harder music and you can challenge yourself by playing that music. He really pushes us to strive further and to challenge ourselves." The Free Summer Institute also opened Sawyer Heidemann's eyes to the possibility of auditioning for NIYO in the fall. The Waverly Shellrock Jr. notes she was looking into it recently after picking up the violin on a whim when the middle school's orchestra teacher suggested it. "I think it's a good learning opportunity. I can notice the difference between 2 weeks ago and now." Though it was a COVID workaround, Childs now wants to hold the Summer Institute each year, seeing it as a good preparation for NIYO, which began its audition September 13th. For those who can't afford the $350 fee or need help with transportation, help is available. When those kids go, they're going to be leaders now, and that's what we need," he said.
And a short Courier will not publish on Monday as we commemorate Labor Day this year. We will be giving our carriers and delivery staff the opportunity to spend the holiday at home, and we will not be publishing the Courier on Monday, September 6th. You can still read local news online at www.wcfcourier.com. Activate your digital account today at wcfcourier.com. /join to access all your online offerings. Now then, obituaries. Oh, I've got to read the commercial here. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Courier for Sunday, September 5th. Again, Eunice and Thomas know we already know who we are. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, we're going to have a look at the... What did I miss?
Oh, just the weather, maybe.
They don't say here anything about weather. They already know the weather.
Okay.
Not a bad day. Obituaries. Joyce Hartman, age 85, passed away at her home from complications of MDS cancer. Attended Iowa State University. Married, detasseling crew for 20 years. Impacted the lives of many young people with her work ethic. Fabulous seamstress, making wedding dresses, bridesmaid dresses, and other attire. 4-H was a passion, leader for many years, putting her time at Iowa State University, longtime member of Iowa Paint Horse Association. Remained active up to the last 2 years with her horses and still mowing the yard. Family and so forth. Funeral services 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Westgate. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, September 7th, and an hour before service to the church. Burial in Fairbanks Cemetery.
Willard R. Bill Hansen died at Unity Point Allen Hospital in Waterloo, August 22, 2021, after suffering a stroke. Taught high school, known for his tenure in the Iowa State Legislature. Lived a full and meaningful life. Services are being planned with the help of Richardson Funeral Home for a later date to be announced.
Perry Lee Steinmeier, 65, of Waterloo, died peacefully at his home surrounded by loved ones on Wednesday, August 25th.
Globmaster.
Sounds good. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. September 10th at Cedar Valley Community Church. Funeral services 10 a.m. September 11th, also at Cedar Valley Community Church, burial in Memorial Park Cemetery. As a way to protect these at-risk family members, must wear a mask.
Cedar Falls, Richard Rick Lee Coots, 76, of Cedar Falls, passed away from complications of Alzheimer's at Deary Suites in Cedar Falls. He served in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve from 1963 to 1969. Volunteered in elementary schools, doing programs on sexual abuse prevention. Memorial services. Memorials in lieu of flowers may be sent to Friends of Cedar Falls Public Library, St. John Lutheran Church, Cedar Falls, or Cedar Bend Humane Society. Memorial services 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, September 7th, in the courtyard at St. John Lutheran Church in Cedar Falls, with interment in the Cedar Valley Memorial Gardens. Family will greet friends 30 minutes prior to and after the service. In case of rain, services will be moved to the sanctuary. Those in attendance required to wear a mask and bring a lawn chair and dress casually.
Bring a lawn chair to church?
Well, it's going to be in the courtyard.
Oh, okay. Frankie Cameron, 73, of Evansdale, formerly of Waterloo, died Thursday at Iowa City Veterans Medical Center of complications of COVID-19. He was a Marine, worked at Rath Packing for several years, then Deere Foundry for many years, retired in 1989, avid reader, known to read the newspaper from cover to cover, enjoyed reading Western novels about cowboys and Indians, enjoyed Western movies and shows, favorites are John Wayne, Gunsmoke, and Bonanza. Graveside Memorial Services, 2 p.m. Wednesday, September 8th at Garden of Memory Cemetery, with an interment to follow military rights by United States Marine Corps Honor Guard and Evansdale AMVETS. Memorials directed to the family or Iowa City VA Medical Center.
Traer, Kenneth Ken Dale Adolphus? Adolphus was born on October 26, 1949 in Waverly. Attended UNI. Here we go. A Morris system operator with security services in England. He served his country from 1970 to 1974. Humble, faithful, loved his country. Let's see. Service. The funeral will be on Tuesday, September 7th, 2021 at 11 a.m. at the Church of Promise in rural Buckingham. The visitation will be on Monday, September 6th at Overton Funeral Home in Traer from 4 to 6 p.m. Burial will be in Geneseo Church Cemetery. Overton Funeral Home in Traer is handling arrangements.
Nancy Ernestine Davis, 82, died August 23rd at her home in Utah. Born in Waterloo, of Cherokee and Danish heritage, worked for John Deere Waterloo Works in the accounting department. Two girls, enjoyed their family and country life, retired to Nevada, Coos Lake Mead. Let's see, I don't really say anything about funeral arrangements.
Waterloo, Mary Moselle Pook Kuhn, 87 of Waterloo, passed away Friday, September 3rd, 2021, at Rosewood Estate of Friendship Village. Let's see what. She loved to cook and garden. Private committal service will be held at a later date at Harlington Cemetery in Waverly. Memorials directed to Cedar Valley Hospice.
James P. Shields, 84 of rural Fairbank, died Wednesday at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Worked 42 years at Donaldson Company in Oline as a foreman of the press department. Obtained 5 U.S. patents for the company. Also farmed, raised, and sold Christmas trees, asparagus, and raspberries. Liked to keep busy, happiest in nature, or working on projects in his shop. And again, let's see, Mass will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at St. Athanasius Catholic Church in Jessup, with burial to follow in the church cemetery. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, September 7th at White Funeral Home in Jessup.
Cedar Falls. Robert Kevin Barnes, 65 of Cedar Falls, died Monday, July 12th, 2021 at Unity Point Allen Hospital in Waterloo. A celebration of life will be held Sunday, September 12th, from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Rotary Reserve. Memorials directed to Samaritan's Purse.
That's not all.
Carmen R. Tompkins, 96 of Waterloo, died Thursday at Lakeview Landing of Friendship Village. Teaching certificate from Upper Iowa University. Taught country school in Hazleton. Black's department store in Waterloo for many years. And support groups. Memorial services later date. Memorials to Cedar Valley Hospice.
On Tuesday, August 24th, 2021, it was discovered that Jenny Lynn Graneman, 36, of Omaha, Nebraska, had left her earthly life. That's a different way of putting things, it was. It doesn't say here when her services. No, it doesn't.
Donald W., called Don Schmidt, 92 of Waterloo, died at Ravenwood Specialty Care. Served in the Marine Corps during the Korean War. Worked for Fullerton Lumber and United Concrete for over 20 years. Retired in 1996. Member of a Denver American Legion Post 653. Memorials directed to Denver American Legion Post 653, no services will be held.
Arthur D. Tribon, 90, of Beverly Hills, Florida, formerly of Waterloo, passed away on August 30th, 2021. Condolences shared with a family through McGarren Cremation Service.
Sam Weech, last name spelled W-E-I-C-H, 56, of LaPorte City, died Wednesday at Cedar Valley Hospice of cancer. Public Works Director, retired in 2020 for 4 years, firefighter in the LaPorte City Fire Department, assistant, former assistant fire chief, advanced EMT, and assisted North Benton Ambulance Service. Visitation 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the church, and that would be at what church? American Lutheran Church. Also an hour before services, which will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 8th, at the American Lutheran Church in Port City.
Parkersburg, Delbert L. Kalwarf, 86, of Parkersburg, died Thursday, September 2, at the Unity Point Health Allen Hospital in Waterloo of natural causes. Funeral service, 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, September 7th, 2021, at Hope Reformed Church, with burial in the Oak Hill Cemetery, both in Parkersburg. Visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, September 6th, at the Redmond Funeral and Cremation Service in Parkersburg. Memorials directed to the family.
Carol Diane Willert, 75, of Florida, formerly of Waterloo, died in Dunedin, Florida. Employed at Omega Cabinets until she retired. Celebration of Life will be held September 11th at noon at Island Park Shelter Number 1 in Cedar Falls. She will be missed by all that loved her.
Dysart. Tracy Lee Potts, 59, of rural Dysart, passed away of natural causes at his home on August 16th, 2021. No service is planned at this time. God must have needed a great handyman and called Tracy home.
Veda R. Ernster, 92, of Waterloo, died Saturday, April 25th of last year, 2020, at Friendship Village Landing. Attended secretarial school, worked as office manager at Taken Rug and Upholstery, a business that they owned and operated together. Member of St. Mary's Society, sang in the choir and spent time volunteering. Memorial Mass, 10:30 a.m. this coming Friday at Queen of Peace Catholic Church, preceded by a 20-minute musical prelude. Mass will be live-streamed.
Waterloo. Richard Dean Grimm, 83, of Waterloo, died on Tuesday, August 31, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital in Waterloo. He served in the United States Army and was employed with the City of Waterloo as Department of Head of Streets and Sanitation, retired in November of 2000. Memorial service, 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 8th, Haggerty Wyckoff Garrett Funeral Service on South Street with burial at a later date in Webster City. Public visitation from 4 to 7 Tuesday, September 7th, and 1 hour prior to service Wednesday at the funeral home. The service will be live-streamed on the Funeral Home Facebook page. Memorials directed to the family.
Thus ends the reading of the obituaries. Now on the important things, a couple of comic strips. Dennis the Menace. Dennis's dad, her downstairs. Dennis's dad is sitting in his chair reading the newspaper. He calls out, "Dennis, yeah, Dad." So Dennis is peeking around the corner. "Yeah, Dad." Dennis's dad says, next panel, "Go to my bedroom and see if my slippers are there." "Gotcha," he says, and he turns to the cloud of dust or whatever it is you can see in the newspaper. Goes upstairs and peeks around the corner of the bedroom doors, and yep, the slippers are there at the end of the bed. Runs back downstairs again. And the last panel, he tells his dad, "Yep, they're there." On to Blondie. Dagwood says, holding up a pair of pants or something, "Are you the manager of this department?" The manager, the guy says, "Yes, I am." Dagwood's wearing black pants and kind of an off-yellow shirt. The guy in the clothing department's wearing a blue suit and tie. "Yes, I am," he says. He's holding up pajamas. Next panel, Dagwood says, "I'd like to exchange these pajamas." And the store department manager says, I wish you wouldn't." Dagwood says, "Why not?" "Because I've gone 29 days without accepting a return from a customer." Next panel, "So what?" Dagwood's holding up his pair of old pajamas with stars on them or something. He says, "Look, if I can get through the day without having a customer return something, I'll set a new store record." So the next panel, Dagwood's still holding the pajamas. The store manager says, "You can't imagine how important setting that record is for me." Next panel, the store manager's got his hands around Dagwood's shoulders facing him. He says, "Please, I'm begging you," he says. Next panel, Dagwood's going at home, climbing into bed, wearing these funny-looking pajamas, he says. Dagwood says, "I couldn't ruin a chance to set a new record." Thus ends the reading of the comics for today. A lot of editorials today, Adaptive Golf Clinic. Recently, the Husam Strong Foundation held its annual Live Lucky Adaptive Golf Clinic and Charity Golf Tournament. Much of the success of this event is due to the tremendous support of our local PGA, local professionals, and many sponsors, Andy Devine, Nate Luke, Monty Meyer, and Zach Ward. Nate Lubbs volunteered their time to coach our many clinic participants. Without their help, this program would not be possible. Thank you to Mercy One for sponsoring the Adaptive Golf Clinic and Structure Real Estate for sponsoring the Charity Golf Tournament. Also like to thank the many hole sponsors and players who participated in the tournament. In addition, thank you to our volunteer committee members and names and so forth, and some other ones and the golf courses helping those. Next one, stop the blame game. When we have a crisis in our household, we work together to solve the problem, not the blame game. So sick of our government playing the blame game, putting our soldiers in more harm's way. Can we get back to working together in our government and using common sense? Longing for a president like John F. Kennedy. More of them. I'm going to read more.
Read another. Which one?
Well, keep right on reading there. There's quite a few to read there.
Yeah. Drop Columbus. Granted, discovery of America, an important event. Columbus or a Viking first, but atrocities committed by Columbus Party cannot be overlooked. Abuse of indigenous people, slaves to finance a second voyage, and removal from governorship in America due to horrendous conditions allowed cannot be ignored. He died in prison time for his actions and inactions. Columbus should not be honored in naming any Catholic high school. Just faith classes inform me Catholics too long are complacent, if not condoning treatment of non-Caucasian human beings. It's high time we acknowledge Catholic ancestors' feet of clay. I protest continue reverence for persons like Columbus who do not practice the Christian values taught in my Catholic school, pre-seminary, and Catholic college education. Why do I just find out about this in my 70s? In my grade school years, Columbus was a hero. When did parents tell you the truth? Columbus shouldn't qualify for our thanks due to his undoing of anything good he accomplished. White generations' disparagement of fellow human beings is what he models for us. I vote Columbus' name be no longer given to my high school alma mater.
Malls' demise. Back in the 1960s and 70s, when malls were built, the U.S. was an industrial manufacturing powerhouse. The U.S. was rich, and we could support them. Starting in the 1980s, the U.S. began transferring 40% of its manufacturing base south of the border or overseas. These outsources, parentheses, or traders, were U.S. businesses that had no allegiance to anything other than the profit margin. Millions of workers lost their jobs. factories shuttered, communities were destroyed, and the American nuclear family took a big hit. Malls were linked at the hip to those good blue-collar jobs that flew away. Malls closing should surprise no one. And where were our crooked, fat, continued above there, mouthed elected official who swore to serve and protect us? It's not hard to figure that the sad shape America is in is due to losing a big chunk of its industrial backbone. China became the world's number one manufacturer and thus a major world power. The U.S. lost manufacturing and the rest of the world smells blood in the water.
Retiree worries. As a federal retiree, I am writing to raise awareness of the devastating effects of the windfall elimination provision experienced by nearly 2 million people. This policy reduces the earned Social Security benefits of local, state, and federal retirees who worked in Social Security-covered private sector employment and who also earned an annuity. From their non-Social Security-covered government employment, the WEP can result in a monthly Social Security benefit that is $498 lower than deserved. Why should we be penalized for working hard for our country? Additionally, spouses are feeling the burden of the government pension offset, a similar penalty that prevents them from collecting the Social Security benefits their spouses earn from private sector jobs due to their public service. The GPO affects 716,662 beneficiaries, 47% of whom are widows or widowers, and 83% of whom are women. We earned these benefits for our dedication and hard work to the nation, and, as such, I am inviting other retirees affected by the WEP and GPO to join me in calling on Congress to repeal those unfair provisions. It's past time to stop punishing us for our public service and allow for us to collect what we rightfully earned.
Written by Joseph McLaughlin of Dorothy. And lastly, at your service. In times like these, I am learning how increasingly important to your community, important service to your community is. As a Boy Scout, I have always done service work in the community. However, as a young scout, I never understood why service work was important. Back then, service work felt more like a chore that I was required to do to get my next rank in Scouts. Now that I have completed my Eagle Scout project in downtown Cedar Falls, I've gotten to see what it means to others when you volunteer and help serve your community. It is a very rewarding experience that you can learn a lot from. It's also important to help each other and serve our community. So when you are helping in the Northeast Iowa Food Bank or building a community garden, remember that your actions and volunteer service can benefit you and your community. I encourage everyone to look for ways to volunteer. Contact the Volunteer Center of Cedar Valley at 319-883-3015 or email them, and that's signed by Carmen Wirtz of Cedar Falls. Call the Courier. Where are the casinos in Iowa? And it lists a whole bunch of them in Iowa. When will Kotosi Drive be repaved?
From the Green Creek Bridge to Huntington Road is currently being reconstructed this summer. The portion of Kotosi Drive from Huntington Road to Green Hill Road does not have a definite date for construction at this time, but it will continue to be evaluated for future work. This one down here, you need to read.
What is the reason for corn coin shortage?
As we answered on July 21, yet another problem we can chalk up to the coronavirus. According to a statement from the Federal Reserve, the COVID-19 pandemic has significantly disrupted the supply chain and normal circulation patterns for U.S. coins. In the past few months, coin deposits from depository institutions to the Federal Reserve have declined significantly, and the U.S. Mint's production of coin also decreased due to measures put in place to protect its employees. And fewer coins came back from customers to banks, coin sorting machines, and cash registers as people have stayed home.
And lastly, in regards to Reed Avenue in Tripola, when are they going to start paving it?
According to the Bremer County Engineer's Office, the contractor has full discretion as to when they begin work on the project. The pre-construction meeting was scheduled for August 31, and the late start date on the contract is September 6th, so work was likely to begin sometime between those dates. Contact the engineer's office for more details on the project.
And that's it for today's reading of the Courier for Sunday, September 5th. Again, Tom and Eunice have attempted to convey some of the things here. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
Bye.